It is one thing to admit to being feared or hated, quite another to admit that you are unloved and lonely and that it is taking all your strength to hide it.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that rates and reviews the internet's most beloved, most shipped, most TikTok famous books, and we tell you if they're really worth your time, especially if you're busy like us. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. And today we are delving into a book talk favorite. It's something that has been highly requested on the book talk community, purely because it's like being perceived as this getting out of your reading slump of Fourth Wing and ACOTAR and needing to pick up something else. And I guess we get to tell you whether or not that is true or bullshit. Spoiler, it's bullshit for me. It's The Raven Scholar, and it is a book. It's a high fantasy book about a very unique world where they have eight guardians that are represented by different animals, like a raven, a monkey, an ox, a dragon. And those guardians represent like different facets of human like emotions or abilities, like stealth and intelligence. And humans are kind of sequestered off into those like classes if they're high class people, and they choose their different houses. And then once every like 24 years, the houses name a champion to compete to become the next emperor of the world. And in this festival, it is a competition between those champions that includes fighting, logic, and each house gets to do a trial. And we kind of find ourselves weaving throughout the world in this like third person point of view, seeing all of it unfold as we realize that the world is not always as it seems. And there's some dark political games happening in the background.
Yep. There's a murder and someone's got to solve it.
Someone.
Not the one who was chosen to do it.
Except, really, you don't have to solve it. It ends up not mattering at all. But maybe that's too much of a spoiler. I don't know.
It won't spoil anything.
Not at all.
Okay.
You got reviews?
Hell yeah, I do.
Because people freaking love this book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Go on.
Oh, I was just going to say I have two. I can just go ahead and go. One star. If I was stranded on a desert island and this book was the only entertainment I had, I would use its pages as kindling.
Yep, that's the one I had.
Yeah, I was like, it was the only funny one. So I was like, I wonder if I'm stealing Catherine's.
No, I love that.
The other one that I have is just like a little bit more how I felt, also pretty short, but one star. And it said, I lost interest once Iana was exiled. Actually, should we consider that a spoiler? It happens in like the first.
No, the first chapter, you start to like this character and she dies.
It's a prologue.
Yeah.
I was surprised by it, but it literally happens in the prologue anyway. I lost interest once Maybe I should just say I lost interest once X character was exiled.
That's the prologue. It literally doesn't matter.
Okay, whatever. Cut all of this out. I lost interest once Iana was exiled and Nemo became our protagonist. The book centers around a tournament of unlikable characters. There's even a murder mystery that holds no intrigue. I could care less about these characters. Nemo's mental dialogue with the ravens was my breaking point. DNF at 60%.
Yeah, harsh. I have a two star I think you'll like based off what you read. It says, I liked the idea, but I struggled liking any of the characters enough to care what happens to them. Oops.
Yeah.
The most likable character is the girl who gets exiled in the prologue.
Yeah. I spent the whole book waiting for her to come.
Yeah. Back. come back from the dead. Turns out just dead. I found a 1-star review very quickly that just says, war is fucking over. Thank God.
Yep.
You know, it was hard to find bad reviews because people, like we've said, really love this book. Goodreads overall rating averages 4.38 out of 5 stars. Fable, 4 out of 5. Storygraph, 4.44 out of 5. And Storygraph readers, I feel like, are the most critical. So yeah. That's crazy.
I mean, this book, I don't know if it won, but it was at least in the running for a Hugo Award, which I would normally consider to be like fairly like prestigious fantasy award. So that was a little surprising to me. I've looked at all our reviews, so I don't know if anyone wants to go first, but
I actually didn't look at all of our reviews. I gave it 3 stars. I love the premise of this. The premise is amazing. This story should be amazing. The world, so cool, so fleshed out. And like the plot is actually pretty good too. However, the main character is so unlikable that it dragged down in my enjoyment of the book, where normally I can bang out a 600-page fantasy book I like in like 2 days. This book took me forever to read because the main character, it's extremely unlikable and not really redeemed at all. She's just kind of there. And for some reason, the book is 600 pages. So while this book should have been great, for me, it was only 3 stars. It was average.
Yeah. That's actually like basically like really similar to how I felt. I gave it 3 stars. I did debate giving it less because I was so disappointed in this book, because the first probably 300 pages were 5 stars for me. Like, I loved the beginning of the book. I was in it. I was sucked in. I was so excited. The first, like the prologue in particular, sets you up for something that you think is going to be really interesting and complex. Again, it's the prologue, so not really a spoiler, but there's 2 twins, and the boy twin ends up basically betraying his sister, and that leads to her exile and her death. And it's like so gripping. And then I feel like the rest of the book is like not about that at all. And I'm actually not really sure why we needed to be let in on that moment, because it was just like you get built up for what you think is going to be this really intense and complicated story of political intrigue and story about how this moment kind of changed everything for so many characters. And it's just really not that. All of the characters felt super immature to me. I hated the plot because I thought the first 400 pages had basically nothing to do with the last 150. Like,
it's true.
The whole
Someone first said it started feeling really YA halfway through in the reviews.
Yes.
Extremely YA. The characters are older. I think the main character's like 34, which I was really excited about. I'm sorry, 34 going on 16, maybe. Like, not a grown woman. And basically, I just thought the book was really disjointed. I didn't understand why it was constructed the way it was. I felt like it had no finesse. There are plot holes on plot holes. Like, actually nothing makes actual sense in the ending. If you think back to like the things you learned in the start, it's like no one has clear motivations. None of the characters you spent any significant amount of time on ended up mattering at all. Like, I felt like the first 400 pages were just a waste of my time. They were all designed to be a red herring that distracted from what was really going on. But it actually just was like, I just spent 400 pages reading something that didn't matter.
That, I guess, to that point, you said you were leaning lower. I almost started leaning higher than a 3. And then the end came. And I was like, no, never mind. No.
Yeah,
I suffered all of this for that ending. And it's fun fact, it's book one.
No, this is a trilogy. I am literally on the same wavelength as both of y'all. I gave it 3 stars, but I was leaning a 2.
When have we like ever agreed like that?
It's been a while. It's been a long while, especially on a fantasy book. This is unprecedented. I mean, that's Casey, you put a very fine point on it. The plot lost the plot. Like literally the beginning, you set up this beautiful world, amazing magic system. This is super unique. I cannot think of anything else like it. You have this interesting dynamic between these two twins. And then you're just kind of like pulled away to this random girl who gets thrust into the twins' mess. And then that's who you focus on the rest of the time. And she's not likable. She's an idiot for being so smart. She's not acting her age. She's acting petulant. And it's just so frustrating because you set up this intrigue between this family and the crown and the emperor and the political machinations around it with these highborn families and lowborn people. And you could have had this very interesting dynamic with Nima being lowborn versus highborn, but we just lost that plot basically halfway through to 60%. I wanted to DNF at 60%. Like, it took me basically a deadline and finally, after pushing this off for weeks, getting back into it just to finish it. So I say I finished it. The ending has nothing like the beginning. They just make up shit at the end where they didn't even tease some of the twists. The twists just happened and you couldn't have predicted them because there was no way to predict them. They just appeared out of thin air, which is not how you write a book. You're supposed to tease it. And this is coming from a person who like does complain about being like books being too formulaic and too predictable that I can predict them. I would prefer predicting a book than a book just being like, okay, problem solved here with some magic fairy dust. What?
Yeah.
No, you can't do that.
No, yeah. Built up this big ending and then like fizzled. It was like you lit a firework and then you threw water on it.
Yeah. And I don't know. We can get more into this in the discussion section too. I don't want to talk about it too much right up top. But I was like, why did we spend so much time with Nima?
Yeah.
There's actually no reason she should have been the main character.
No.
She's not important. And but she's annoying. And she's insufferable.
She's supposed to be like the reluctant maybe hero. I don't know.
She's supposed... The way I read it, granted, I don't know the author's actual intentions. The way I read it, we're supposed to be reading a book about incredible wealth and privilege and the machinations of an empire from the perspective of a rare success story of someone who grew up at the bottom of the heap and the fight to direct the empire at this crucial moment when power is changing hands. No. And also, she's just as corrupt and morally fallible as all the other ones. So.
Okay, well, let's say that the rest of I could say many things, but I'm holding back.
I know.
Here's a question.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, you'll like this question. Is the book more plot or character driven?
Oh, Lord. It's technically more plot driven, but Jesus Christ, is that plot not plotting and not following a linear line?
I want to emphasize, you think you know what the plot is for the first 300 pages. But then all of a sudden, as the book goes on, that plot becomes less and less and less important until that's not the plot of the book at all. And then you're not really sure what the plot of the book is until like the last 50 pages.
And then it ends.
Yeah. And those two plots don't connect. So
not at all.
I would say it's plot driven, but it's like a weird journey.
Yeah, I don't know. I almost want to say character driven just because it's Nima's ambition that drives the whole story to happen, essentially. But I'm actually at a loss for what it really is, you know?
Except it doesn't. It doesn't actually, her ambition doesn't matter except for the very, very beginning.
Yeah, she has no power.
I'm being generous when I say it drives the whole story because...
I'm not even really
sure. One decision she makes changes all the what happens.
But it doesn't.
Except it doesn't.
It doesn't. It just changes.
Someone else would have done it.
Yeah. It just changes the fact that she's in the room when she could have not been in the room.
Yeah. She could have said no and someone else would have done it.
Yeah. And then that person would have been in the room.
Yeah.
I like having a 30-year-old woman who makes tough decisions and is the stereotypical nerd being thrust into this fantastic world of competition. However, I don't like her.
Make her actually 30.
She wasn't even rooting for herself. Why would I root for her? Anyway, yeah.
She so
I
guess plot driven.
That's one of the key parts of the problem for me is like, why would you want a contest where most of the contenders aren't trying to win? Like, that's part of why I read the review I did at the beginning, where it's like somehow there's a competition with like no stakes. It's like, it's why would I read this? I already know who's going to win. And that person won.
Well, maybe that part's a spoiler. I don't know.
Well, I didn't say who it is or who won, but it's very obvious the whole time.
Okay, well, here, would you read another book by the author or read the next book in the series?
No.
Okay. I am not going to read the next book in this series. I would think about reading another book by the author. I think I saw a review that her other books are actually mystery novels, which doesn't make me feel hopeful. But I think she, because the mystery, I meant what I meant by that is the mystery part of this book was not well executed, in my opinion. So if that's what she has experience doing, I'm feeling skeptical. But there were good parts of this book. And one of the reasons why I'm so angry is because this book had a lot going for it. I just feel like it really fumbled the ball spectacularly. But there was a lot of good elements in it. And so maybe, you know, this author could write a book that actually kind of executed.
I have hate read a series before just because I needed to know what was going to happen. I see you, Atlas Six.
Yeah, like I know which series it is.
I still don't know. Like, I'm mad enough that I went through all that to get the ending I got that I don't think I will read the next one. I have questions. I want them answered, but not enough. I'm mad enough to never know.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of leads us into the next question, which is, how is the pacing of the book? What's really holding me back is that this book felt so long to me. Like, it took me over a month to read it. Like, I started with like a 2-week buffer time before when we were actually initially supposed to read this book. And when we ended up recording it like 3 weeks later than we were intending on recording it. So I had like 5 weeks to read this book and I didn't finish it till yesterday and I could not make myself finish it. And like, we read big books.
I vividly remember reading House of Sky and Breath in 15 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Same size book.
We read Alchemized and that's 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
I finished The Fiery of the Orange Tree, which was like 900 pages, and I hated it in less time than I finished this book.
I cannot figure out why it took me so long to read, honestly. And it's probably because the plot was so disjointed. Like, I didn't hate it. I really liked the author's writing and I really liked the author's world. Like, I gave it 3 stars. I didn't hate it, but like, I could not make myself sit down and read this in huge chunks like I normally can with a fantasy book. It didn't take me as long to read as you two. I finished it first, I think.
Yeah.
I just had more time. I read it over like 2 weeks, probably. Actually, I did have to put my... Never mind. I read it partially on a plane, and then I was trying to read it when I got back. So the plane ride forced me to knock out like 6 hours of it. And then I had to put it on airplane mode on my Kindle so that the library didn't take it back so I could finish it. So it did take like 2 weeks, but some of it was like I was traveling, so I had to read it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as Casey. It took me 5 weeks. I also had to put my Kindle on airplane mode for multiple weeks in order to keep that library book on my Kindle. Yeah, it's so disjointed. I'm so pissed because it had so much potential, and that's why I gave it 3 stars, is because I can appreciate what was the intention of the book, but it felt like we were just adding plot to plot and adding every imagination that the author had into this book and making it into a word salad. It just, like, know when to quit, I guess, is my main critique, is like, know when to take
that's away. Valid. The way you say that is like, she had too many ideas for the plot and tried to fit them all in, is kind of what it felt like.
Yes. Like, she has too much imagination, which is a good thing. You should have a ton of imagination, especially for making fantasy series. They were all good
ideas. You just had to pick one.
Yeah. You had to pick one or two and stick with those. And like, an editor really needed to tell her, hey, you got too much going on in this book. You need to pare it down a bit. At the
same time, this book is one of the highest reviewed ones we've had.
Dude, I can't. So much of this book, nothing is happening. And I kept telling myself, like, it's a mystery. Mysteries often have downtime where you learn important things that you don't know are important till later. No, none of it mattered. Wasted days.
You couldn't have predicted the ending.
Like, no. I said, though, the writing was good. Yeah. It just didn't take us places.
I enjoyed the writing.
Actually, yeah. It took us too many places.
Yeah. And not enough important places that mattered.
And like, maybe they'll matter in the second, third book, but I shouldn't have to read 600 pages for it not to matter in this book.
Right. Like, and I have a vision of how this book could have gone. And that's always disappointing when you think you're getting into a different book. That's part of one reason why I read the first half of the book so fast and then put it down and then just really struggled to pick it back up, because I became aware that I was not getting the book I thought I was going to get. And then I didn't like the book I was getting instead. And that's just like, you know, you have to deliver on what you tell your author with the characters, with the setup, with the main character is going to be important, is actually going to be delivered.
Guys, should we open our own like publishing editing house?
No one wants their book edited by me, because I'm going to be
like, there's so many times though where we're like, if you move this here and remove this and switch this, this book would be awesome. And part of me wants to just like get my hands on them and help them do that.
I know.
Also, I know it's only my opinion, and my opinion actually isn't superior. I just like,
yeah. I mean, like, you could do fan fiction, essentially. Rewrite this book in your own way.
Yeah. I don't know. We talked about this recently with like Yesteryear. Like, yes. So good. If they'd done it the way we wanted to.
Well, also, don't sell me a plot that isn't the plot. That's my main issue.
By the way, side note, that has become one of our highest ranking episodes of all time. People are probably feeling some type of way, just like we are about it. Like, it has jumped a list of years of episodes up into our like top five highest rated episodes, highest listened to episodes. So we're not wrong. We're just not right.
We got hot takes.
I will say, I think I've said it before, I'll say it again. One of the worst sins of a book that it can possibly make in this day and age is to waste your time. A book with empty space is just going to piss people off. I don't know why it hasn't pissed other people off, because it's pissing us off, but
they got more time. The girlies
are trying to escape, and you gave them a book loving nerd as a like, so could be hero. And so they're taking it.
Dude, I guess I'm like, cut that empty space. Anyway, our last question. Would you watch a movie or TV show of a book?
Nah.
Not if it had this plot.
I sort of pictured Kung Fu Panda a lot of times in my head.
Yeah, no, totally. I get that.
I do get what you're saying with that. I think if they did it as a movie, they would just basically have to completely restructure the plot.
That's true.
In which case, honestly, I would be a little curious to see what they did with it. Also, the only character I really liked was Cain Bellari, and I would maybe watch just to see him.
Yeah, I would watch it if they completely restructured and pared it down.
The foxes were written for the screen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So funny and whimsical, which is why I'm like, I didn't dislike this book. It just could have been so much better.
I think that's why we're so passionate about it. Like, if we disliked it, we would have rated it lower and not had this discussion. But because we know how much potential it had and we were kind of sold on these first part of the book, and then we get to the last part and finish it and you're like, fuck, that wasn't what I was promised. What is this bullshit?
Right. We're passionate.
Always.
Some might say too, but.
Not me.
Okay, well, we all know how this next part's going to go. I'm sure you can guess. It's time for our busy girl rankings.
Zero.
Zero, really?
Yes.
It's this a zero is, for me.
You can't pick this up and put it back down. It's too disjointed. No.
I was going to give it like a two. Like, it didn't feel like a total waste of my time because I still really like the writing in the world.
Like Casey said, it is the longest 600 pages I've ever read.
All right. So we're going to average like a 0.3 or whatever. 0.6. 0.6 average. Yeah. I can't do math. Sorry.
None of us can. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
To be fair, we are hypercritical human beings who read too much fantasy.
I'm actually crazy, like, so surprised because I'm so super hypercritical. I feel like you guys love fantasy so much. Like, there have been lots of times where we've disagreed because I've been really critical of a book that you guys like.
This podcast may have made us cynics.
You know what it really is?
So much that the bar has like gone up and up and up, you know, like the bar is high now because of how much we read, and it's almost ruined some of the reading.
If she had thrown a Shadow Daddy in there, it might have had a chance.
That's what I was missing. Joaquin is great. I was really rooting for her to be into one of the other characters.
You know what? If Ruko was a Shadow Daddy, would have made it a little better.
I was thinking Shaworthy, but
ooh, yeah. That's a good one too. That he would literally be Reese because he has mind powers.
Yeah, except he's a freaking traitor, so.
Yeah.
And that leads us into our spoiler alert section.
Yeah. Okay. Spoiler alert. So a lot happens in this book. There's just a lot of stuff. And
we're not going to touch half of it, guys. Fair warning. This won't even spoil it because
there's so much.
There's too much.
And there's stuff that's just pointless. That is it even worth talking about? Probably not, because it's pointless.
Yeah.
Why are the cockroaches so important to bring up all the time? Sorry.
The murder didn't matter.
Didn't fucking matter.
The trials, everyone quit.
No one in the trials was trying to win. Also, we don't even know most of the trial characters. Like, they're not important.
No.
They all just disappear. The plot twist? No.
I don't know.
The plot twist came out of nowhere because the magic system was not built up well enough. So we didn't know that was even a fucking possibility.
The plot twist paired with the daughter? I'm confused. Anyway.
They just held back a dragon faction.
Okay.
And now she's like the ruler.
She just held one back. Yeah.
And she just absorbs a gem into her fucking forehead and everything's fine.
Yeah. And bosses around a god and she just can. And what is she going to do when she gets there?
Also, the coming, everyone was afraid of the coming of the eight. And then they just like glued them to the wall.
Yeah. They're basically paper mache characters.
Like, literally all these concepts were really cool if you had just picked one to play out.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Fox Guardian was also, that's where I started to lose the plot, was the Fox Guardian.
Well,
the Raven, at first I didn't know who was narrating the book and I got really confused when the Raven was like, "It's me." And I was like, "Why did you just like jar me out of my?"
That was weird.
Like the fourth wall like broke and I was like, what's happening?"
Yeah. Dude, that was crazy. I was like, "Where are we?" Also, Nima's the main character, but we constantly flip into other characters' minds whenever convenient. Mm-hmm. There's no rhyme or reason for
because
it.
Because it's the raven. It's not her.
Well, okay. So this is one of my questions.
It's not just the raven.
Yes, it's everyone. Yeah.
It's Shaw, it's Ruko. Right,
but you're supposed to be observing it via the raven, but that's why the POV really did irritate me, yes. And that made it harder to sink into the book.
That's one of my questions that I have for us, because I fucking irritated by the third person omniscient like storyline.
I rarely like a third person omniscient, by the way. So
it's not sometimes, if it's executed properly, but the fact that we're in third person omniscient and yet we are not knowledgeable of everything that's happening, even though we are supposed to be, as the reader, feeling everyone's vibe out and reading all of their point of views. Anyway, this book would have been so much better if we had just stuck to like one or two POVs. And it was like, just you could have the prologue with Yana, you could have Nima and maybe Kane, maybe.
Maybe just you Nima. Don't need any more. You just need Nima. You don't need to know what's going on in these other places.
You don't even need Nima.
All the people, all the things that it showed you in other places were red herrings.
Mm-hmm. None of those characters mattered.
No.
Like, if you want the information that badly, make Nima take a risk to get it.
Yeah.
This is one of my huge issues. I bring this up a lot in books with male main characters, where there's a male main character and every female character in the book is objectively more interesting than them. And I'm like, why did we make this man the main character when every other character is more interesting than them? That's kind of how I felt in this book about Nima. Why is she the main character? She's not central to anything that's happening. She's not even trying to figure out anything that's happening. She's not trying to win the trial. She didn't even solve the murder mystery. When she did, it didn't matter. This book didn't need to be about her at all. This entire book should have been about Ruko and Ysila and the Emperor. Those are the only three characters who mattered even a tiny bit. And we should have learned about the daughter. Where we end in the book, those are the only characters who matter. And we spend almost zero time with them throughout the entire novel.
No, the book should have been about Yana.
Yeah.
Yes. She was the only interesting character. The whole book, I was like, where is she? I was so excited for like some sort of twist that had to do with her. Mm-hmm. No.
She dead.
She's actually just dead.
Yeah, the book should have been about her.
Like, I liked the idea of the maid who helped her in the woods, like coming back to seek revenge. Like, that was a cute storyline. It got buried with the rest of the storylines.
And also, the maid
received no punishment.
She received no punishment, and she's rooting for Ruko. What? She
betrays her whole reason for showing up in the first place. Like, she has no actual, like, importance. Or backbone that has to do with the actual plot. Like, it drove me crazy that I felt like we had all these events, we had all these characters, everything eventually was getting lost to me. Like, I was forgetting who people were. No one felt fully fleshed out. It really bothered me that I did not understand anyone's motivations, and that drove me crazy at the end because characters kept doing stuff and I was like, why? Like, why? I don't understand why anyone did anything that they did at the end other than Kane. Like, even Nima, I was like, what are we doing, girl?
Not really, though, because the gutter rat who you were like, this could make a good king, he just walked away from the last trial.
Yeah.
The only person who made sense was Ruko.
Well, the reason he walked away is because he wasn't Kane anymore. He was the fog.
I know, but the only one, like, we didn't need that.
Right. Stupid.
The only made one who sense, made sense way. Was Ruko.
Well, and then they said he like a fox spirit or a full spirit guardian couldn't inhabit a human and live. And he got away clean off of that.
I knew I started to realize I was going to kind of hate this book when they stopped developing the tension between Ruko and the other contestants. Because at a certain point, you're just supposed to like Ruko. And I was like, no. That bitch is a snake.
Or did the bear lady just left? So problem solved.
Right. And we're all just going to forget about that now. Also, the whole reason the emperor did that whole weird convoluted thing made no sense. And the only reason he did it was because the chief of police guy, I can't even remember his name anymore.
Obrus?
Vabras fought to keep Nima alive for no reason. That never comes up again. For some reason, he doesn't want Vabras him to kill her.
Also, for some reason, let this other guy live as the key emperor the whole time. So I don't really know the point. That's what I'm talking about.
And so many people knew the secret and it never got out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not even
like five people knew it, but that's still a lot.
I mean, Vabras, like, letting Nima live, fighting for her to survive for absolutely zero reason.
Well, and then this man is painted as a massive villain, Vabras. And then he just, like, becomes the fox.
Yeah.
Problem solved. Whole
stuff with the animal gods and the weird remnants of them and the factions of them, whatever. I was like, we've lost it. Like, this is stupid. It doesn't make sense. And, like, what are they actually, like, affecting in the story? Like,
well, and then they're like, we created them. It's like,
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
why am I here then?
Yeah, and they trapped them extremely easily with magic we had never heard about before.
Yeah, like a lot of good ideas, too many.
She could flush them out.
Here's the book I thought we were gonna get. They start with that super, super compelling introduction with the initial betrayal. So many of the people in the present day with Nima, quote unquote present day with Nima, are connected in some way to that initial betrayal.
Yes.
So I thought the story was going to basically be a telling about how that one betrayal has, like, affected all of these people and all of this cause and effect and all of the moral sacrifices that they made in order to serve the kingdom and fulfill their role, despite it being wrong, is ultimately going to change the fate of the empire and people are going to pay, basically. Like, the resentment and the moral injury and the secrecy is going to fester. And then all of these people who are connected to this event are tied now, competing for the throne. And this one event is going to explode. Didn't happen.
Well, honestly, I should have seen it from the start when the engineer ox guy randomly just helps this child. And you're like, why?
And he says to Yana at the very beginning, if you ever need help, let me know. And I thought he found some way to help her.
Yeah.
And then what's his name? Shale? I cannot remember.
Shawworthy.
Shawl.
Shawworthy, who's been our shadow daddy, and then he totally sold out.
Completely fades to the background. He basically doesn't exist for 90% of the book until he just
feels so bad about carrying out an order that he, like, upends his entire life to make it up to this family.
Crazy. To the family who constructed the circumstance.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, because even the mother admits when asking him to help her that it was her fault to begin with. Like, she started this ripple effect down. Her and Andrin, like, she started this ripple effect. And she's just like, do you want a job protecting my youngest daughter that you couldn't protect my older one, even though I just said it was my fault and not yours? And he's like, yeah, sure. And then just witnesses a coup, witnesses an assassination. And it's just like, okay.
Yeah. The entire island.
Why did he exterminate everybody for no reason?
That's also what I'm saying. Vabras, we're supposed to believe Vabras' whole motivation for carrying this out, a literal massacre of hundreds of thousands of people, because he likes order. Yeah, like, creating genocide is really orderly, I've heard, because one person is going to stay in power. That makes no sense. It makes no sense as a motivation.
Yeah, why would they leave the outside world and people be like, oh yeah, I mean, I get it. We'll keep following you.
Right. And everyone just kind of goes along with it. It just is, like, ridiculous. Anyway, one of the other reasons I'm mad at the book is because Nima at the end is like, I know all of this is my fault, because if I had just left with Kane earlier, like, we wouldn't be here for any of this. And, like, so many of these events couldn't have happened. And I was like, that actually doesn't make any sense, because someone else would have signed the death order. I'm not saying it was right for Nima to do it. Nima is morally bankrupt. The only difference is
her and Kane wouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
Right. everything else would have happened. And Nima is like, I feel so bad for like researching all these old folk spells for the emperor. But I was like, he already knew the spell that allowed him to take over when he met you. You didn't even help him with that. He didn't need her at all. And nothing she did mattered.
But he said that he learned that spell from her, which is a plot hole.
But it's a plot hole. He said it and it drove me crazy. I almost threw the book across the room. I was like, he couldn't have... He needed the spell already, like years before he met her.
Yeah, because he had already inhabited Bearson.
Yeah. When she was like a child. I was like, what? And he learned that from Ysilla. Ysilla is initially the one who taught him magic.
Yeah,
I think he learned other things from her, but yeah.
But he said that like the soul binding he learned from her.
Yeah.
Which is not true.
There was too much happening for me to even notice that there was this plot hole.
Yeah, because too much was fucking happening.
That's what I'm saying. There was too much. I didn't even like totally notice that. Just kind of glazed over it.
Like
glossed over it.
And this is what I was talking about earlier about like plot points that just appear out of nowhere. Like I never saw this coming. I was like, okay, sure, it's Gerritsen. Like it's not Bearson. Mm-hmm. But for it to be Andrin, I was like, excuse me, no, that you can't. No,
you can't. The fantasy authors need the stop. That if you don't see the body, they're not dead. You know, like I would have been fine with it with Yana because you painted her like a main character at the beginning. But why Andrin?
Right.
Also, like, how did no one see the body? How did no one in the entire world see the body and not think,
Yeah, in a public coup, right? Like this all happened in front of people. And everyone, no one knows. Also, so another plot hole is that. Oh my God, I totally forgot which one I was going to talk about. This is so horrible. It's going to come to me in the middle of one of you two saying something, and I'm going to be like, fuck. Yeah, I don't remember.
Well, continue you just on. Scared us into not saying something. No.
I'll wait politely. Oh my God, it really drove me crazy too. And now it's going to drive me even more crazy that I can't remember it all of a sudden.
There's too much to remember.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I remember as much as I do because I finished it like 2 weeks ago. But like, I don't know. I really did enjoy some of the characters, not the main character.
So the thing I really did enjoy is that there is like a grand sense of irony that carries through the book about how all of these characters just sort of stumble into fate. Like basically all of the characters, the ending happens because all of the characters are cowards. Like every single person is too much of a coward to do what needs to be done. And that's what creates the ending. Like Nima was too power hungry, too success driven to just leave. She signed a death warrant, implicated herself. She then served the emperor and empowered a horrible person. And then she couldn't kill Ruko, even though the fate of the world was in her hands. And so all of this has happened. Ruko was willing to betray his sister, which set the stage for his own downfall. He was unwilling to see other people as humans. So he was not able to be the person or have the allies he needed to in that moment. Like, it's just like all of them, like they're all implicated. All of their terrible moral decisions like created this. Ysilla. Oh, here's the plot point that I was angry about. Ysilla basically betrays Andrin, and he knows she betrays him because she gets the dragon contingent to come try to kill Ruko, and he just lets her get away with it. She was going to try to sabotage him. But also the entire framing of this part of the plot is a plot hole. Because Andrin could have completed the copying spell with any of the victors. It did not have to be his son. If Ruko dies, the plot continues on where Andrin kidnaps whoever the victor is and then just copies them anyway.
But she paves over this hole by saying that his vision told him it was Ruko.
Right.
I mean, and so did Nima's, to be fair.
Right. But that's the only reason it has to happen this way. There's technically no like literal reason in the plot that everything had to unfold this way for Andrin to continue on his power. He could have done it based on the rules set in the book with anyone.
I agree with what you're saying. Like, for something that seems so steeped in kind of Southeast Asian fantasy lore, destiny plays such a huge part in those stories. Mm-hmm. And honor. And you get teased like it should be a destiny thing, like you're saying, but there's no honor. So like it actually doesn't pan out to be one of those beautiful Southeast Asian fantasy tales. Mm-hmm. Because while at first, you know, the hero should reject their destiny and then they're like, no, I will do it. That's not what happens. And it makes it so confusing.
Yeah. And it's like everyone is sort of let off the hook and no one is let off the hook. Yeah. Because I'm also just so mad that the initial entry point into the book is this one scene, and which frames to the reader that this scene matters. This is the part where everything falls apart.
It is the best written scene, other than I don't know why the Oxman helped her.
Yes, but it actually isn't the moment when everything falls apart. That scene isn't important for any specific reason.
Other than tying all the characters together. Yeah.
Right. Which didn't end up mattering because all the plot that's in play in the book is in play way before that scene occurs. So that scene, even being the first scene, is red herring. Like,
yeah. Because you think she's going to come back. She doesn't.
And it's like,
unless she does in another book, but if she does, I don't care.
Yeah. And introducing a random magical ability we've never heard of before.
No magic in the book at all until the end,
except for her like incantations. Yes, Scylla's incantations.
Well, those really weren't even there until like 2/3 of the way through. Yeah.
It's not a twist, and like it's
the
never
dragons explained. Were mysterious, and that was that. Otherwise, it was just people fighting because they were trained to fight.
It's not a twist, and then we never learn how Andrin actually got to that spell. We don't even know that he just seems to have it.
We also don't know how he can conduct magic. Like, is everyone a magical being? Can everyone say a spell?
If you can sing, sure, I guess. That's what it makes it sound like.
So how is magic not seeped into everyday life?
That's ridiculous.
I don't know. I feel like talking about it, it's actually making me like the book less.
And then Benna, this also drove me crazy. Benna is like one of the nicest characters in the book. And she ends up actually being one of the most important because she's the only reason Ruko's not freaking dead, because she cheered for him, even though why did she do that? Because he's still a bad person. He's a bad person.
She found him redeemable.
She's the bad person. He's a bad person through the entirety of the book. And that pissed me off because I love a redemption arc, but you have to make the character redeemable. He was the same soulless, power-hungry control freak in the end as he was in the beginning.
Except he saved like 2 people.
Right. Except he didn't murder every single chance he had.
I mean, I would have loved a Ruko redemption, even though I don't think you can really be redeemed from killing your twin sister. But
no, I hate to do the Ruko Zuko comparison. But in Avatar, The Last Airbender, the reason we can forgive Zuko is because his redemption arc is incredibly hard fought. And in the process of redeeming himself, he loses everything. That's what it takes to redeem a person for like these kind of grand sins. And Zuko didn't even do anything as bad as Ruko. You have to confront yourself. The character has to confront themselves. And that decision has to have grand and important and irreversible effects for the plot and for themselves as a character for it to be a redemption arc. None of that happens. Ruko is not redeemable. He almost kills Nima at the end when he thinks she's going to threaten his throne. He like gets all up on her. Like, he's not different. He's not learned. He's not changed.
No, I don't know. So what you're saying is watch Avatar instead.
Kinda. That story has everything this one has, but does it better.
Yeah, because Ruko, literally the plot happened to him. He controlled literally nothing in his life. He was entirely trained to be a puppet for his father in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
So
a skin puppet.
A skin puppet, yeah. Which It does make you shitty.
She only gives him a little humanity at the end so that you feel bad when his father like sucks his soul out of him.
Exactly.
But even then I was like,
but like it just happened to him and he never did anything about like anything during the book. He saved one person one time and that is it. So there's no reason for me to not feel like I don't feel bad for him. I pity him because that sucks. But like I don't feel for him.
No, and like she tried to show you that he felt some remorse. He thought Yana was still alive and stuff, but he really didn't. Like, he still wanted to be emperor no matter what. It didn't really matter. He probably would have killed her again.
Right. He didn't actually learn the lesson. And if it really came down to it between him and power, he would have killed whoever was in his way, which is not growth. It's also like, the one thing I did like about it is that his fatal flaw at the beginning that makes him so easily manipulated into betraying his sister is the same fatal flaw that allows him to be a puppet at the end, which is he is so selfish and single-mindedly focused on achieving something for himself that he is totally blind to how he's being used by others. That's exactly what happens in the beginning. It's exactly what happens in the end.
It's true. Yeah. His ambition. He's just too single-minded.
And that's a lot of the character's flaws. Even Nima is not really an empathetic person. Like,
no.
She only really cares about how things impact her. And that's another one of her fatal flaws.
She's like, oh no, I'm going to die. I better participate in this whole thing now.
Right. Like, she only cares about the things that impact her. She's not really like a heroine.
No, she's a very reluctant hero, and I wouldn't even call her a hero, but that's a trope that
she didn't save anything. She did nothing.
She had sex with Kane.
Like, Kane and
but the Kane also had sex with everybody else. So
that's true. Kane was slutty. Kane and the Ox Contender ended up being the only people with any moral fiber.
Tala was too focused on her family and love to do anything useful.
Right.
Actually, the best character was her wife.
Yeah.
Who
escapes, thank God. I did think it was interesting too, and not in a way that I agreed with, but it was still interesting that normally like the artists and the scholars are considered the first people who are like the revolutionaries, like the people who can't be easily led because they're in touch with stories and with knowledge. And that's not how this book goes at all. The characters, they had to like just destroy the entire Fox faction because they were too chaotic. And their lack of desire for order in the book is framed as like an inability to go along. Whereas the scholars and the musicians were actually a core part of what propped up the empire.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I understand she was trying to be subversive, maybe, but once again, too many ideas squeezed into one story.
So this is a question that we have in here.
Wait, we have questions in here?
I know. We've just been ranting. I initially loved the festival. This is something I've noticed in a couple of different trial books we've had. Do not write a trial book if you don't want to make the main plot the trial. I'm tired of reading trial books where the trial eventually just fades to the background. Like, do the trial. The trials should be what matters. Every single character should be busting ass to win that trial, or it's not compelling. I want to read real.
We are the Hunger Games generation.
Yeah.
Feed us.
I want to read. If you're going to do a trial book, make the trials fantastic. These trials were so underwhelming. And by the end, they didn't even matter.
No. Yeah, they were completely underbaked.
If the whole book had been the trials, I would have been fine with that.
Yes, because you could have cut out the whole second half. All the crazy stuff with the emperor.
The dragon contender was interesting. Nima having to participate was interesting. Mm-hmm. Yasila being present was interesting. The love story that could have been there, interesting. And then she added 20 other things.
Yeah.
I was like, never mind. I guess we don't even care if the trials happen.
Like, the eight should not have returned in this book.
No.
That should have been a book three situation.
And you shouldn't now be trying to save the gods? I'm questioning.
Yeah, they're going to cause the apocalypse as soon as you open those gates.
And like all of the gods were captured except the fox and the raven.
And one contingent of the dragon, which is trapped in Ysila's daughter. That somehow they were able to just do that for no reason.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. Hated. Why were there exceptions?
The whole gods involvement thing eventually just felt so cheap because there were no rules. And they were also just like, felt just like they were there to like prop up the plot that was set up in the beginning. Like, why is the fox inhabiting people? Why is the raven inhabiting people?
Why did you wait until the end to tell the entire chapter about the fox?
It's just ridiculous. Like, why is this in this book right now?
And like I said, I didn't hate this book, but you're making me kind of hate it.
I kind of hated it. I think I'm really at more of like a 2.75.
I shuffled between 2 and 3, but I gave it the benefit of the doubt because it had so much promise. Mm-hmm. And the beginning was so great. And I just like, I can think in my head how it could have been rewritten where we didn't even need Andrin. Like, you could have just made Ysila the villain and made her like murder her son as soon as he took the throne. Like, that would have been super interesting.
Yeah. Because the other thing. Yeah. The other thing I think that this book kind of gave me blue balls. Excuse me for the crude expression. But when you set up the book with the concept of this massive betrayal, what I want by the end of the book is some form of vengeance. Like, that's what you've queued me up to desire. When the likable character dies in such a just horrible, betraying way that so many characters in the book participated in, I want these characters to have to eat their own shit. Like, by the end, like, people need to pay. Someone needs to be avenged. And so it just felt like I felt very let down by the ending. And I think that's the root of it. Like, where is Yana's vengeance?
In book 3, probably. So I will never know. Catherine's final question. Will you continue the series or was this book too damn long and you don't want to continue? ...
That's my thoughts.
I don't want to continue.
It's too damn long. There's too much shit in it. I cannot trust that this author won't throw more shit into the other books and expect it to stick. I have a feeling all these books are going to be interwoven, but also not interwoven. It's just going to be plot chaos.
Yeah. We've met 30 people. I'm sure we'll meet 30 more. And I'm sure I won't remember even.
Well, because we're moving. We haven't even talked about this. Like, Andrin wins and like manages to get his daughter, who's part dragon, I guess, the queen of the dragons. And now they're going to move the whole capital to Samra. On the whim, the just night of coronation, we can just move the whole capital. So now we're going to have to move the whole capital.
Seems that's like
more priority. People that you have to introduce.
Not really, plus, because you killed all the other ones.
Right. Well, plus the unresolved massacre, where even if people aren't saying so, a lot of people know there's some fucked up shit that went down.
Yeah,
and half the people they know are dead.
I feel like, oh, she had great ideas that could have been so many different books and so many different series. And instead, she's combined them all into one. And people loved it. People loved it.
Yeah. You could have had a political book. You could have had a fantasy book that had more of the gods in it. You could have had a murder mystery. You just had too much.
Yeah.
I'm angry. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
And you had to read it all through characters you didn't give one single fuck about. So, cherry on top of the cake. Well, you guys have book recommendations?
I'm going to recommend The Tainted Cup.
Dang it!
Yeah. Because it is a murder mystery that sticks to its own guardrails. And it was a great book with better characters and a better world building because the world made fucking sense.
Yeah. Caitlin, I can go next. So you have a few minutes to think of a replacement recommendation. I have a few. My first one is Serpent in the Wings of Night, because that is really like an epic fantasy novel with trials that are really intense, trials that really matter, a twist that is not totally unguessable, but that is incredibly vital to the ending of the story, and a system of gods that are very present. So I think that book gave me a lot of what I wanted in this book, even though book two failed me hardcore.
We should probably read the book the author just sent us then.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if we have to. And then, okay, this is going to sound like a crazy recommendation, but I've been rereading the Harry Potter books. Hate to give the author a compliment, but those books genuinely are a masterclass of if a gun is mentioned in the first act, it'll go off by act four kind of thing. Like, nothing is convenient, nothing is rushed. Every single thing in the book is planned ahead. Every twist makes sense. Every power is introduced and worked into the book, so it's not just a matter of convenience. And that's what really, really bothered me in this book, is things just getting brought up. And it's like, I think that's a great book if you want to read a fully fleshed out fantasy world where there's really interesting plots that are really well constructed and thought out.
I'm going to give you a recommendation that actually plays into the Southeast Asian fantasy lore that are books I liked. One Casey did not like, and that's When the Moon Hatched. That character is kind of disagreeable. You don't totally like her, but I still loved the book. And that's how you write that girl. And then Six Crimson Cranes is my favorite book set in the like Southeast Asian fantasy world. And that is what I was talking about when like it's a reluctant hero who has to just say, actually, I do embrace destiny and honor, and here's what happens. So don't tease us with things. Like, break the stereotypes, but not that hard, okay?
Well, set it up, okay? Set it up.
Yeah.
And don't try to do too much. If you're going to write a trilogy, it's okay to have other things happen in book two and three, all right? Well, calm down.
I know we keep saying, like, why does every book have to be a series, but also sometimes it's okay to admit you wrote more than a trilogy.
Yeah, for sure. What we really mean is, we don't want a book that could have been an email doesn't need to be three books, but a book that could have been a 5,000 word, 5,000 page treatise. It's okay to make that more than one book, girl.
Captain looks like drained from this conversation.
I'm so drained, honestly. Like, this book drained my soul, and that makes me so sad because I love fantasy books and I love world building, and it had such good promise. And I know I keep saying that, but it makes me so mad how much time I had to invest in this book. I would have DNF'd it, honestly, because
I would have DNF'd it. There's no way I would have picked it back up.
I probably would have finished it, but that's it. That's all I'm giving it. But once again, a lot of people actually really like this book. Storygraph, the most critical and I feel like more analytical readers, because the analytical people are on Storygraph for the data they get from their logs. They love this book more than anyone. So I don't know. Maybe we're just like jaded and out of our comfort zone, and who knows? So if you often share our opinions, don't read this book. But if you often disagree with us, you might like it.
Okay, well, I think that's all we need. Crazy, but we did not even look at the questions. We just talked and talked and talked about this book. So if you want to talk about this book to us, you can do that online at Busy Girls Pod, pretty much everywhere. We're also at busygirlspod.com, where you can see our book recommendations and more information about what we've been reading. And please rate and review our podcast.
Yep. So thanks for listening. We love you. We'll try not to take a month to read books on our list. And I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.